The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
The guy from Ballinrobe came down and sat beside me. He said, I'd take the draw, and I said, I'd go home. I said, no. I said, this is the time. I said, if we're going to do it, now is the time, and you can sense
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The Football Show on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power, the best partnership since Vidic and Ferdinand.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I'm prepared to anything I can
well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to the Football Show on this Thursday night. We'll be looking forward to the start of Serie A with Nicky Bandini in around half an hour's time. Jose Mourinho's Roma have put one foot in the next round, winning 2-1 on the road tonight. Tottenham are struggling currently though, 1-0 down away to Ferreira, about 15 minutes left in Portugal. And we'll talk about Shamrock Rovers' 4-2 defeat in Estonia in a few moments' time. Just to bring you up to speed on the scores in the Europa League qualifiers, Rangers 0-0 started the second half in their game in Armenia against Alakskirt. Earlier today, there was a victory for Legia away from home against Slavia Prague. Sturm Graz have beaten Mura by 3-1. Olympiacos currently lead 1-0 against Slovan Bratislava, and we wonder about what might have been. And Rapid Vienna are currently 1-0 up against FK Zorya. They're the scores so far in the Europa League. In the Conference League, Spurs still have 14 minutes left to try and turn that around. Dan McDonald is with us. Dan, how are you getting on?
Hi, Will. How are things?
I'm good. I'll kick off with Shamrock Rovers because that could have been a really good result if Rovers don't concede the fourth goal at the end. If after Scales' goal, they go away with a 3-2, you're thinking it might be on in Tala next week. But it's a big ask now, particularly where away goals don't count anymore.
Yeah, I suppose the only thing you could say from the positive slant is that, I mean, they had this experience, exact experience against Slovan Bratislava last month where they were 2 goals down, got into the second leg. Really strong performance at home, got it back to level, and then got done by a sort of a dodgy refereeing decision or, you know, a bad goal to give away. So, yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying about the it would have been a sort of good result of 3-2. It would have been sort of the way you'd phrase it, and I was writing it, you know, making the best of a bad situation. I mean, that defensively, that's probably as bad as they've played, I think, that Rovers side. I know that you would speak to some people who play against them regularly, and they would say that with Rovers back three, the way they play, like they are a positive attacking team, and they give opposing teams chances. And I suppose they live on the edge a bit sometimes, like they're reliant on the back three to sort of sweep up some issues sometimes. And the first leg away in Bratislava, you know, they lost 2-0, but they gave away a penalty at the end. And it almost looked like Flora maybe had sort of watched some previous times where Rovers maybe had been exploited and sought to punish them, and they succeeded in doing it. But I agree with the premise of the point that if Liam Scales, if that is the end of the game, you know, it's 3-2, I think Rovers are favourites to go through, to be honest. I think now with the 2-goal lead, it leaves them with a real uphill task. And I don't know. I mean, this is a great opportunity for them. You know, it's sometimes, you know, we talk about Irish clubs. Now, I say sometimes, all the time. In fact, we talk about Irish football generally, even like the Piemont game yesterday, they got hammered. And I was almost thinking about that going, how many times are we going to do this story about, well, you know, you're up against a team with more resources or this or that. And it's always the way in Irish football. But what Rovers have here is a tie against the champions of Estonia to get into the group stages. It's not one where if they go out, that you console yourself afterwards by saying, well, you just can't compete with that. You can't compete with a team with those riches. Like maybe Bowes could when they lost to Pauk. And you see Dundalk, who really should have gone very close against Vitesse Arnhem last week. You see Vitesse Arnhem have drawn 3-3 away with Anderlecht tonight. And you're thinking, okay, but you can't compete with that type of clout. But you're playing against the champions of Estonia, all Estonian players, and they're a good outfit, clearly, and their results in Europe this year have been good. But this is one that in Mick McCarthy terms, if you'd offered them that at the start of the competition, they'd have taken this for the group stages. So they'll, if that fourth goal comes to hurt them, they'll find it hard to get over it, to be honest.
Do Rovers lack a little bit of balance, Dan? We were chatting to John Giles about this earlier, that at times they were overrun in midfield, which meant that Manus was more busy than he probably should have had to been because the way the defence was left exposed sometimes on the counter-attack. Are they lacking that little bit of balance in midfield?
Yeah, I think as the way to play with a back three and like attacking, you know, the wing backs are urged to get forward. I think the big issue is obviously then there's a big responsibility on the, I suppose, the two midfielders, the two sort of more holding midfielders, I suppose, in Gary O'Neill and Dylan Watts. And Dylan Watts is probably more of a creative player. And I suppose the argument would be, you know, in hindsight, could you have gone with a more defensive-minded player in there? But they don't necessarily really have one. I mean, Chris McCann is just back from injury, maybe, who's a very experienced player. But I think, you know, for Rovers to do that would be to alter the way that they play, to alter the style that has carried them where they are. And generally, like, they are a bit more efficient defensively than that. But maybe just sort of stepping up to European competition. Whereas they have the ability to own the ball in the games in the League of Ireland because they're so good in that department, that maybe, you know, without the ball, they've been exposed a small bit more in Europe. And it maybe, yeah, has potentially exposed a slight lack of balance. But also as well, and I think that that's a valid point, but you can also say that and also say as well that some of the errors they made tonight were just really bad mistakes as well too. I mean, Stephen Bradley was training in on that point, but I mean, just some of the goals they gave away. Again, you know, you don't mind sort of bowing and going, well, listen, you can't compete with that type of quality. But really, they it was self-inflicted aspects of it. And I don't think it's dead by any means, but it certainly leaves them needing something pretty special next week, whereas at 3-2, it just needed something pretty, you know, just play to their level. They need to probably go above them now to make the most of it from this situation.
Well, there's plenty of goals in the Shamrock Rovers team, so if it becomes a shootout next week, Rovers will fancy scoring goals, and their approach is going to have to be that, given it's a two-goal deficit when they start. And we got to see, again, the best of Graham Burke tonight with his finish for his goal as well, Dan.
Yeah, and it's a strange one in a way, because I actually was surprised that they went for Burke, that they played Graham Burke ahead of Danny Mandrew, who's been very good this year. I mean, and could arguably, you know, you could argue, is he slightly more alert in terms of going the other way? You know, and it's a very positive move to go with Graham Burke, as you would expect. But I mean, Stephen Bradley, you know, would say, you know, Graham Burke can produce a goal like that from his sort of from nothing. His European goal scoring record is very good. And so it proved. And to be honest, I mean, he scored one goal and made the other. So it's very hard to quibble with his inclusion. He's a very good player. And but there is goals in the side, definitely. I mean, can they score two goals next week? Absolutely. Like, there's absolutely no doubt. I mean, there's going to be, you know, it's up to 3,500 next week, so close to 50% capacity. And it will be intense. And I think it'll be just a bit more on top of Flora Tallinn, who are still playing under pressure because they're trying to be the first Estonian club to get into a group stage. So, I mean, the one thing about away goals being taken out of the equation is that there's no, like, it is really just halfway in the tie. Like, it's a 180-minute shootout who scores the most goals. You know, it's not a case that you're left in some situation where the away goal, which in this case would have actually played the Rovers' favour, with two away, but it's pretty straightforward. I mean, Rovers score early next week and you cancel out that late goal and that's it, you go for it. And you would imagine they'll start the game with a fair bit of intensity at home. And like, they were very good against Bratislava at home. They were actually as a unit, they were far tighter. They just were a lot more compact. The gaps that were there tonight just weren't evident, similar to the first leg in Bratislava. So you're, from their perspective, you're sort of hoping that home turf just leads to an all-round more coherent display. And if they score first, it's very much game on, and it's as you were. But I think, you could see in general play, you know, at times tonight when Rovers kept the ball quite well, that they actually probably have some better players in certain areas of the park, you know, or certainly they're well able to cause Flora problems as much as they had, like, the Estonian team. I mean, there's, I think, 11 of the Flora squad were in the most recent national team squad. I think 8 players played in one of their most recent games. It wasn't far off playing the Estonian national team tonight, and they look like a team that know each other very well, and they know their game, and they have a great understanding. But you still feel you know, if Rovers can score first and get the crowd behind them, it's still there for them. But they've set themselves a scenario here they didn't need to set themselves.
Can I ask you about Scales? Because I was chatting to Shane Keegan a couple of weeks ago, and he felt that it's probably a case of Shamrock Rovers keep him around once they're still going for European qualification, and in all likelihood he probably moves on at that point. The interest in him has been pretty intense, particularly from Celtic, but Shane was thinking that with his performance, also with his versatility defensively, more clubs than Celtic may well come in for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the vibe seemed to be it probably will be Celtic, though. I think there was other interest, but I mean, speaking to Stephen Bradley after the game on Sunday, that was the game against Drogheda, when he sort of confirmed he would still be travelling, and I think they'll do everything to have him involved in the second leg. And I'd say the fact that Celtic, and there's a link with Dermot Desmond, probably helps in terms of, you know, relations and not putting pressure on to get the move done quickly. But the language was very much, you know, both clubs are happy but where they are. It wasn't a week prior to that, Stephen Bradley was talking about other clubs, whereas this was very much about two clubs having an understanding about a situation. And I think the understanding is that Liam Scales will go to Celtic. Probably not his best game tonight, I have to say, as much as he scored. And he is a very versatile player. And has been very good at left wing back this year, but maybe Sean Hoare was playing on that side tonight on the left of the three, and I'm not sure if their understanding was 100% perfect on occasion. But it's strange. Like he's obviously trying to go out in style and, you know, put a lot into it, but actually maybe just guilty of one or two sort of rash mistakes tonight that you wouldn't define him normally, but. Not his best night.
Yeah, not the only Shamrock Rovers player to make a few uncharacteristic errors tonight. Dan, it's been a decent start for some of the Irish players across channel so far. We've had a couple of rounds now in the EFL between the Championship and the games lower down in the divisions. And I follow a lot of the accounts which put up goals and assists when Irish players are involved. And those accounts were absolutely flying at the weekend. We had Parrott scoring and assisting a goal for the MK Dons. Callum Robinson seems to have started the season particularly well. We might chat about Duffy with Brighton back in the Premier League and a good performance from him at the weekend. But it seems a few of the Irish players, which is good news for Stephen Kenny ahead of picking a squad, have started the season pretty well in the Championship and below.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it almost feels like... You'd prefer if, like, you know, Saturday 3 o'clock and Sunday 4 o'clock and 2 o'clock would be sort of prime time slots for the Irish players. Whereas now it's a bit more the Tuesday evenings and the Wednesday evenings. You're looking at the EFL lineups and maybe the live goals shows and that's where you're seeing some of the characters pop up. I mean, you could say that's a reflection of maybe where the players are at the moment, but. It has been an encouraging week from that respect. I mean, Troy Parrott is the one that immediately springs to mind. The fact he scored for MK Dons last Saturday, also scored on Tuesday. And I think what you're going to see with Troy Parrott this year at MK Dons is that he's playing on a really attacking side that creates a lot of goal-scoring opportunities. And it's not just that he scored a couple of goals. I think if people have been able to see the goals, I think it's actually the manner of the goals that he scored as well, where... You know, he's made sort of intelligent runs. His movement off the shoulder defender has been very good, and he's finished really confidently. And I think he's already equaled his tally in the entirety of last season, which was, loan wise, was a difficult time for him. Now it is in League One, and that is the obvious point that someone would make if they start saying, well, you know, Troy Parrott now has to play for Ireland, and it's like, well, he's done it at League One level. And you know, in recent times, we've been able to probably, you know, on occasion have a sort of a sniffy attitude towards players in League One because there's players operating at a higher level. But I think we sometimes always just break it down to the next Ireland game and the next window. And maybe that's not actually fair. I think we just need to look at it generally and say that for all the expectation around Troy Parrott, he's like a 19-year-old. He's still 19. And not everyone has a good loan spell first time round. And if this can be a loan spell that allows them to develop and to play in front of crowds on a regular basis and all different types of scenarios that you will face in League One and get his confidence up, well, then that'll stand to him in the long term because it feels like he needed it. But there's others as well. I mean, Gavin Bazunu at Portsmouth is in League One again. Brilliant save on Tuesday. It's going to be a big year for him. And there's others we can talk about. The Championship lads at West Brom certainly have made a very good start to the season too.
Yeah, if we look at West Brom then, like Robinson is an active possible false nine when it comes to next month too. And look, he started the new season with an eye for goal straight away, Dan.
Yeah, he scored. I mean, they played three games and he scored in all of them, which is, you know, it's a perfect start, really. Now, in his case, there's been a couple of scrappy ones, but he's been in the right place. Yeah, and in fairness, his goal on the first day against Bournemouth was a great finish. West Brom hammered Sheffield United last night with long throws, and both Robinson and Darragh O'Shea's goals came from the sort of the consequence of sort of balls ping-ponging around the box. But yeah, like Callum Robinson is one that Kenny has always given you the impression that he really likes him. At times with Callum Robinson in Ireland, it's been a question of where he actually plays. And what we did see in Serbia in March when Kenny went to, you know, with the three at the back, you know, we saw him employed in the striking department. At times he's been on the right or on the left, more so the right of like a sort of a front three or a 4-2-3-1, and it hasn't always necessarily allowed him to showcase his main attributes. And it may well be that in a team that's devoid of goals, and maybe he's not 100% like an out and out striker completely, in the way maybe that some other options might be. He's certainly putting his hand up for inclusion. And he was involved in the March window, and then he wasn't around in the summer. But I still think, you know, if he arrives fit and well, he'll be well in there. I mean, Darragh O'Shea is an interesting one for me, because I think it's almost like these defenders, like there's always, you know, they come in, or any player really, they come in initially, and there was a great surprise element to what Darragh O'Shea was doing in the Championship. He made his Championship debut in December of a season, and then by the end of it was promoted, went straight into the Premier League, and everything was like, well, he's a pleasant surprise, this is great. Whereas now, all of a sudden, this is his first season where he's dropping down to the Championship and he's expected to be a big player. With Ireland, he's now more of a first-choice player with a bit more expectation. And he seems to have started the season like someone who's relishing that, as opposed to being overburdened by it.
He never seemed that concerned. We had him on the show last year and we were talking about the step up to the Premier League, and he seemed to take it in his stride. Unfortunately for him, West Brom didn't have the players to stay in the Premier League, but he seems a confident kind of lad, and it didn't faze him at all going straight into the Irish team when there were some defensive injuries and a drop off of form in the case of Duffy. He just walked straight into the side and looked perfectly at home.
Yeah, and I don't think his position in the Ireland team is under much threat at all. Even though, like you mentioned, you know, Shane Duffy has come back to form, which is great. But I think O'Shea is fairly safe in most combinations and in most systems, I would think. I mean, if Kenny went with a back four in any of these games coming up, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility O'Shea would end up at left back even. But I think what Kenny seems to like about him is that he's a good passer of the ball. And I think with his defenders, you know, stepping forward and being encouraged to pass the ball, I think he likes, you know, O'Shea's range. But he can play on either side of a back three as well. And that's just ability. But as you say, I think attitude as well is a big thing too. But he's one that went out and played the loan circuit again, went to Exeter, wasn't necessarily making massive headlines, but you can see that he's got a good head on his shoulders, I think. And I mean, where he's come on a lot in 18 months, and I don't necessarily think we've got anywhere near the bottom of where he can go to either.
We were debating on the news round earlier, Dan, who potentially play at left wing back for the games coming up. I know we're a few weeks away and injuries and form are going to be dependent, but hopefully Matt Doherty can be reinvigorated at Spurs now that he's got Nuno managing him again.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be some debate around that, though, doesn't there, with the people who cover the Spurs beat about whether Nuno really fancies him in the context of Spurs, and depending on whether he's going to play with the back four, which was the suggestion, certainly. And we'll see if what happens on the opening weekend is the sort of template for the way forward. But we do need that to happen. You know, that's certainly something that Stephen Kenny needs to happen. And I think, yeah, that debate around left wing back, yeah, I think it's possible that across the three games there'll be three at the back in one game and a back four in another. And you wonder what that impact on things. I think James McLean's move to Wigan and playing regularly there, and not the fitness is ever going to be an issue with him, but I think he, like, He brings a certain intensity to things that I think Kenny still quite likes. So I think he's probably, as much as Ryan Manning has started the season quite well with Swansea, I actually think it's more, with Enda Stevens out, I think it's more a case of, does he go with McLean there? Does he flip Matt Doherty to that side? Or is it a case where you go with Dar O'Shea if you're going for maybe a back four or not? And it could just be Doherty or McLean left back. I think they're the players in the game, as opposed to someone like Manning, who started the season pretty well for his club. And there is that debate. I mean, you want to get Matt Doherty on the pitch, ideally. But then there's a question of balance and being suited on the left side too. So there's a couple of equations to consider with it.
There is. Football on Off the Ball, of course, with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, check out gamblingcare.ie. We mentioned at the outset, Dan, this reinvigorated looking Shane Duffy, which from an Irish perspective was great to see last weekend. He got in the Premier League team of the weekend for how he played with Brighton and Hove Albion. You're just hoping that the miserable year of last year is put behind him, whether it's at Brighton or whether it's elsewhere, and that Shane Duffy can get back to the player he was before last year.
Yeah, definitely. I think actually, you know, in fairness, in the he was one that from the end of season summer break, I think he really benefited from it, as in the end of season internationals, I mean, where rather than going off into the summer with the memories of that dreadful year at Celtic, he got in and around the Ireland camp and got to play that game in Hungary and got a fair bit of praise for his performance. And maybe that just set him off on the right note into the summer. And then from listening to some of what he said, he seems to have decided to make some changes in his life. I'm sure he'll talk about that in more detail when he's pressed on it. And he's come back in good shape. Now, it did take a bit of a COVID case to open the door for him late in the day last week. But he was ready for it. He wasn't moping in the background with you know bereft of confidence and wondering about his future. Now it is an interesting one. I mean, where does he stand? Does this save his Brighton future, or does it merely put him in the shop window for someone else?
I would think it's probably the latter, given that they were happy enough to let him go the year before.
That to me is probably the percentage call, although, and particularly again, I mean, he played in the back three last week, which some would say that wouldn't necessarily always suit him, but he did do that. But it depends. I mean, it wouldn't shock you if he was involved in transfer discussions right up till the last minute, and certainly his options would be better now, I think. I think people probably need to see that he's back to himself, and that will remind people that, yes, you know, we'd like to have him at our club. In that case, where that club might be, would it be the Championship? You'd think that's the most likely scenario. But I don't know. It sort of depends. I mean, even the fact that a COVID case can hit a camp at short notice and hurt them, which is something that we're going to have to, you know, get used to. It's happening clubs, home, abroad, everywhere, all codes and all sports. You kind of wonder, are some managers and teams going to want to carry a bigger squad to be prepared for those eventualities? So if there is to be a sequence of events that sees him going, Brighton would need to have a fair bit more cover there than they possibly do at the moment, I think. So I wouldn't say it's a certainty that he moves on. And maybe, you know, I think Veltman might be out again this week, I think. So if he gets another chance and does well again, then all of a sudden he's making a case for something more.
Well, watch this space over the next 12 days. Dan, good to chat to you.
Thanks, Will.
Just a reminder again of our competition. We are giving away €25,000. It's your chance to win a life-changing sum of money. What you do with it, build an extension, buy a boat, book that dream holiday, it's all up to you. €25,000 could be yours this Friday. All you have to do is answer this question and we could be calling you back tomorrow afternoon. Which reality TV show is ending after 17 years? Is it A, The X Factor, or B, Strictly Come Dancing? Text the word play to 57599 with your answer A or B. It'll cost you €2.50 to play, plus your standard message rate. You have to be over the age of 18 and you will be playing across the Go Loud network of stations. Full terms are available on our website. Get the entry in by tomorrow at 3 p.m. and we could be calling you. You have to answer within five rings if you want to win the competition and the €25,000 in cash. So text play and your answer to 57599 and the best of luck. We'll be back talking Serie A.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, brightening up your evenings like Jurgen Klopp's teeth. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're very welcome back to the Football Show here on Off the Ball. Our football coverage is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, check out gamblingcare.ie. Now, it's been a remarkable summer for Italy, winning the Eurovision at the start, then the delayed Euro 2020, and some very impressive performances at the Olympics. Serie A kicks off this weekend. Delighted to say to look forward to the new season. We're joined by Nikki Bandini. Nikki, how are you getting on?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the new Serie A season because so much intrigue about it. You know, Inter trying to defend the title, having broken Juventus' dominance last season. But then I look at this Inter squad compared to last year. Antonio Conte, who's been so pivotal to their success over the last couple of seasons, gone. Romelu Lukaku sold to Chelsea last week for a Chelsea club record fee. He's been replaced by Edin Dzeko. They've kept Lautaro Martinez, but there's maybe not the same shine about last year's winners of Serie A.
Yeah, I think actually when you take a step back and look at what Inter still have, there is a lot. They had the tightest defence in Serie A last season, and the whole back three, the goalkeeper, they're all still there. They've still got Nicola Barella, who had an impressive Euros in midfield. They've still got Marcelo Brozovic alongside him. They've still got, as you mentioned, Lautaro Martinez. And they also actually even have added Hakan Çalhanoğlu from Milan. But the problem is, you've gone from winning the title with a group that included Conte, who, even though he's not a player, was described by the club's own sporting CEO, Beppe Marotta, as the top player. And then you have your actual top player, which is Romelu Lukaku, both taken out of the team. Lukaku was the top scorer and the top assist provider on this team last season. So if you just take it purely on footballing merits, it's obviously something that you've lost as a team. You've lost goals, which is obviously pretty fundamental in a game of football. But even beyond that, you've lost such an iconic figure, such a personality, such a leader, I think, for this team. And I think that's really the greatest concern for me. It's not that Inter don't still have a talented squad, because I think if you put them side by side with most other teams in the division, maybe there'd be one or two, Juventus being the obvious one, who you could still say, honestly, no, this is a more talented squad than Inter's. But I think there's such a psychological thing going on here, which is you've just won the league for the first time since 2010. You've ended 9 years of Juventus winning it in a row. And to do that, and in almost before you finish celebrating, to see it all dismantled, to see the two figureheads of the project taken away like that, psychologically, it's got to be so dispiriting for everyone involved in the club.
Romelu Lukaku's application over the last couple of seasons was remarkable. Some Manchester United fans felt that he wasn't mobile enough or didn't maybe quite put in the effort in his last couple of seasons at Old Trafford, but he was like a player reborn with the work rate that he put in last season particularly.
Yes, Lukaku's transformation in Italy is really something. You think when Inter signed him for not that much more than half of what Chelsea have paid him, that was a record signing. It was perceived as a gamble. There were a lot of people pointing to his time in Manchester United who felt he was heavy, felt that he was very heavy in his touch as well, that he was a plodder, that he was just a fat-track bully. There were quite a lot of criticisms that came his way from fans of Manchester United during his time there. And I think you can see some transformation in how he is that's physical. He did change his diet at Inter. He did change the way he was eating and his relationship with his body as an athlete. And he was leaner. And I think that had a tangible impact in terms of the way he moves on the pitch and the way that he appears on the pitch. But I think beyond that, what he found at Inter, which he hadn't had for a while, certainly at Everton he had this sort of support, but he didn't at Manchester United. He found a project where he was central. Conte had been trying to sign Lukaku for years, certainly back when he was at Chelsea. He'd been trying to get hold of Lukaku. He had an idea in his head of Lukaku as, frankly, the ideal striker for the way that he wanted to play football. And I think Lukaku absolutely ate that up. I think he loved being made into someone who was more responsible, who was supposed to drag the team forward. And I think he relished that responsibility and thrived in it.
The financial crunch has hit Inter here. Having to sell Lukaku, having to sell Hakimi for big money meant that they were able to keep some of the other key players within the squad. Antonio Conte clearly seemed frustrated that they wouldn't be able to build on the squad that he had previously. This is the financial crunch that probably faces Serie A in a wider sense as well, Nikki.
Of course, and faces all of European football, if we're being totally honest about it. There are very few clubs in European football who are spending this summer in a significant way, and several of those clubs are I suppose we could describe them as independently wealthy. They're clubs that have generally not even wealthy individuals, but wealthy states backing them who are able to inject cash in a slightly different way. The COVID pandemic has been hugely detrimental to clubs' finances all over Europe and I'm sure all over the world as well, because there's been no gate receipts for a lot of clubs for more than a year at this point, or certainly hugely diminished gate receipts for others. And Italy is no exception to that. It was actually a really big talking point a few weeks ago, what was going to be the possibility in terms of fans back in stadiums this season, even some talk of teams threatening to strike if they weren't allowed to have some fans back in seats this season. And what we've settled on for now in Serie A is there's going to be 50% maximum attendances to begin the season. So Italian clubs have suffered just like clubs all over Europe during this pandemic. And perhaps you can say clubs in the Premier League have been more insulated from that than clubs in other leagues, because the Premier League has such strong TV deals. But I would say that what's happening in Italy has certainly been replicated in Spain, Germany, France. For most clubs, this is a really difficult time. And that's why you're not seeing really anyone spending other than if they're being able to bring in some funds first.
No great surprise then that Juventus have clung on, along with Barcelona and Real Madrid, to the idea of a European Super League transpiring at some point. Juventus clearly feel that they need extra revenue to come in.
Yes, absolutely. There's a long story to be told about Juventus and Andrea Agnelli and the idea of the European Super League, because frankly, I think he is someone who has, in his leadership, done a remarkable and extraordinary job of building up Juventus's finances, of restoring their commercial appeal, of getting them to a point where signing Cristiano Ronaldo was even a possibility, which would not have been at all at the start of his presidency and back when the club didn't have didn't have the new stadium, where so much has changed for it over the last decade now. But there is a certain breaking point, I think, for certainly in his mind, for what's possible within the confines of the Italian setup, because there are still lots of clubs in Serie A, including really big ones, that don't have their own proprietary stadium, that aren't taking the same steps to increase their commercial revenue, to modernise, to become brands in the way that Juventus see themselves as a brand. And so the Super League, in his mind, is the great answer to all of this. It's the way that you are finally able to break free from the shackles of a strictly Italian context and put yourself in a global context, and then your sky becomes the limit in terms of your commercial possibilities. And that impetus, that drive for Agnelli, isn't going to disappear overnight. Whether or not there's really any legs anymore in this idea, whether it's still possible to bring together the Super League idea, is a very different question. But I think the motives in his mind for it, and I should clarify, I'm not suggesting that I support these motives. I'm not someone who's in favour of a European Super League, but to understand what he wants, this is what he wants and why he wants it. I don't think any of that motivation has gone anywhere.
Is he viewed as a particularly ruthless man within Italian football then? Because we were talking to Paddy Agnew earlier this year, said he's respected within business and he went this direction as opposed to going down the family line with Fiat. He's willing to cross over the guy who's a godfather to his children in order to put Juventus into this competition. He's willing to step away from a significant role within the European Clubs Association in order to do so too. Like, he gambled all the way on the European Super League and has stuck with that project despite all of the negativity towards it.
Absolutely, and you can see that he is supported in that, because if he wasn't, he would no longer be president of Juventus. You know, it seems sort of odd to say it about someone who's the president of a football club, but he has a boss too. You know, he has to report. Juventus is one part of the family business, and he has to report into Exor, which is actually the holding company that owns Juventus. And if they were unhappy with the way he was leading things, then he wouldn't be there anymore. You did see with Juventus that there was some change this summer. Fabio Paratici left the club, and there have been changes in terms of the leadership within the club, but Agnelli is still there, and I think that probably speaks to how he's viewed within the family business. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he gets to have that role. That's something that could be taken from him if he was perceived to not be doing the job well. And look, in terms of ruthlessness in business, I would say within business as a whole and within football business specifically, he won't be the first to act ruthlessly and without thought, perhaps some personal relationships in order to get done what he thinks needs to be done. But of course, that story with Čeferin and the European Clubs Association remains an absolutely extraordinary story, and one probably that will continue to unfold for a little while yet.
Sticking with Juve and Cristiano, it's been a week of stories and back and forths and claims within Spain, initially that Real Madrid could consider taking him back. There's been all these links with PSG throughout the summer that potentially they could be interested in him if Kylian Mbappe was to leave the club over the next couple of seasons, particularly if he was to walk on a free to Real Madrid next season. So speculation continues about Cristiano potentially leaving Juve. Do we expect, though, that he is going to be there come the 1st of September, even based on the statement that he put on social media yesterday?
Yes, I mean, to me, this statement on social media was a bit of a bizarre one, because it was it arrived and a lot of people's reaction to it is, oh, this is Ronaldo saying that he is going to stay at Juventus, which I've read that statement quite a few times now. It definitely doesn't say that. It doesn't say that anywhere. It says that he's angry about people frivolously reporting on speculating on his future and saying it's unfair to the clubs who are involved. But he never says that he's staying at Juventus. I actually am fairly sort of confident that if he had a good opportunity to go on and be somewhere else, he would be interested right now. But I also think no one's going to make that happen, because he's got a 30 million euro a wage salary at Juventus right now. And for some of the same reasons we've already talked about on tonight's show, there aren't other clubs who have that money to splash about at this moment in time. There are very, very few clubs who could afford him. And of those clubs, I don't see any who will make that step to afford him. So I think that he and Juventus, and by the way, I think Juventus, I think there would be mixed feelings. I'm not suggesting they're trying to get rid of him, but I think there are certainly people at Juventus who would argue that the club would be better off at this point to move on, for him to go his own way, and then they could focus on their own journey of developing a new team around other individuals like Federico Chiesa, who's obviously going to be a key figure there for a long time. So I think both parties could even see a future without each other that would be favourable, but contracts are contracts, and I think that the value of this one, the extraordinary amount of money tied up in it, it's just going to be too difficult to overcome for a move to happen before it expires next summer.
Yeah, because when Cristiano swapped Madrid for Turin, they almost went all in on the idea of trying to win the Champions League with Cristiano Ronaldo by the very nature of the money that they spent, the contract that they handed out. You look at an ageing Juventus team that's going to require a bit of a rebuild over the next while. If Cristiano Ronaldo were to leave the club, some things can just fall into place. Like Dybala would get his contract tomorrow if Cristiano was to leave.
Absolutely. And Dybala's position, I think, is a fascinating one. He's suddenly this sort of very powerful position all of a sudden, despite having had a mixed last season. He knows the Juventus wanting to renew his contract. He knows that they see him as quite a fundamental role going forward. But he's 27, and Ronaldo has been there slightly blocking his path a little bit. You think Dybala's best season by far in Juventus shirt was the one before Ronaldo arrived. There's a fascinating dynamic with that contract extension, because Juventus were definitely putting out the word that it was going to be done quickly, and it hasn't been done quickly. So you're right that there are many things that would be unlocked by Ronaldo leaving, because the club could start thinking differently about its whole future. But again, it's just an awful lot of money tied up in that deal for the short term.
How much of last season's disappointment from Juventus and their struggles are put firmly on Pirlo as a rookie coach coming in? Is there a feeling that now that Max Allegri is back, Juventus now become the number one team in Italy again?
I do think Pirlo has become a scapegoat for a team where that wasn't the only thing that was wrong. And I certainly think directors have to take responsibility for the appointment of Pirlo after, a week of being in charge of the under-23 team and no previous managerial experience. It was quite a naive move with hindsight. I think Paratici, I suppose, has carried the cannon to a certain degree for everything that happened with that. The squad had some weaknesses, and I think they've addressed one of the biggest ones by signing Manuel Locatelli. They've got someone who can put his foot on the ball and really control play in a way that was lacking sometimes last season in the middle of the park. But I do think if you look outside of that, it is a very, very strong squad. The centre-back pairing of Bonucci and Chiellini, look, we've just seen them in the Euros, we've seen how good that can still be. and you've got De Ligt, so you've got options for a two or a three. De Ligt has had some ups and downs, but I think he's really coming in the right direction now at Juventus. You've got Ronaldo, and while you have him, whether or not you think he's fitting into the team perfectly, he still scores basically a goal a game, which few teams in the world wouldn't be grateful for a striker who can guarantee them that. You've got Federico Chiesa, who's coming on so, so well. You've got Kulusevski, who had a disappointing first season, but again, heaps of talent. There's so much in this squad that is good. I don't think that means that it's all Pirlo's fault that it didn't work, but I think that when you look at how much there is in the squad that's good, when you look at Allegri's previous body of work, where he just won at Juventus, that's all he did, and you know, prior to that one with Milan, it's hard not to frame them as favourites for the season ahead. It doesn't mean that it was all about Pirlo, but it's hard not to see this group as having the best resources to go on and win the league again this season. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think that some people are painting it as such when it isn't, but they are the favourites for sure.
Jose Mourinho trying to reinvent himself again, one of the other narratives going into this season. Roma struggled last year, but Jose Mourinho also struggled at Spurs. How has his arrival been received within the capital, given that he's going into a team who are probably not expected to contend for the title, but they'd be expected to be up in the Champions League places this season, wouldn't they?
Well, expect or certainly aim towards. I think that the ambition is to be in the Champions League places. And I think by hiring him, that is what the club is saying they expect. I don't think they... You spend that money on his contract. It's not a big contract unless you think that he can get you to that Champions League, because that's what the club desperately needs. Whether or not that is, I suppose, a reasonable thing to expect, given that the competition is another question. They have got some very good clubs ahead of them. Obviously, we've talked about Juventus and Inter, but Atalanta are now firmly established in that top four. You've got Lazio, who are starting afresh under Maurizio Sarri, but you have Napoli, who I think, frankly, have the most talented group in the division outside of Inter and Juventus, and I think they have really kept all of it together so far this summer. So he's up against a lot. But in terms of the reception, which you're actually asking about, sorry, I went off a little bit there, but the reception for Mourinho has been endless enthusiasm in Rome, so much excitement about his appointment. He is still frozen in time for many people in Italy as the person who won the treble at Inter, rather than the person who's gone through spells at Manchester United and Tottenham that didn't really work out. So I think his brand is still very, very strong in Italy. And I think that Roma, who have been through a few more difficult years, since you think it's not that long ago that they were second in the table quite consistently, I think he is someone who's brought a lot of enthusiasm there. And especially now it's been multiplied with Tammy Abraham and Ivy as well, who's something that's very different to what they've had before.
Tammy Abraham has played well away from Chelsea. He had a great season on loan at Aston Villa. Roma fans will be hoping that once he arrives, he can recapture that form. And you know, players who've gone from the Premier League to Italy have done quite well. I'm thinking back about Chris Smalling, Ashley Young, even for a couple of seasons, Inter Milan. These English players have settled in quite well when they've come over in recent seasons.
There's been some hits and some misses. I don't think Joe Hart was very popular as a personality, but he had quite a few high-profile blunders when he was in goal for Torino. Micah Richards never quite became what everyone hoped he would when he was at Fiorentina, but there have certainly been some good ones, as you say. And I really think that Tammy Abraham has a chance to be a big hit in Italy. I think, again, as I was just touching on, Roma haven't had a striker in that mould, someone who's going to play on the shoulder of defenders and really try to find their spaces in behind. They haven't had that in years. And I think that actually, even though it's a cliche, and sometimes I'm the one fighting against these cliches, there is some truth to the idea that the Serie A is a slower league, and there isn't this sort of abundance of pace that you see in other leagues like the Premier League. And so I think his explosiveness and that intent in his game to find those spaces is something that it exists, but it's not as common a trait as it is in some other leagues. And I think that really could be a fun dynamic to watch at Roma. Of course, it remains to be seen how Jose uses him, but I think that Abraham, as an individual, I actually agree with you. I think he could be a hit.
Yeah, that cliche doesn't hold up when you consider, you mentioned Atalanta, a team who play terrific football, and when they get the ball moving on the counter-attack and with the pace they've got out wide, they don't play anywhere like a traditional Serie A team.
No. No, I should stress that. Like, you know, I'm always the one banging that drum. Italian football is not defensive. I'm not trying to say it's defensive. It's the opposite. It's one of the highest scoring leagues in Europe. But there's just certain styles of player that I don't think you see as often in Serie A. They do exist. And indeed, you could find one at Atalanta and Duvan Zapata, who's one of the players who had been linked with Inter. Who knows, could still end up at Inter this transfer window because there's time left. But because he is someone who really attacks those spaces in behind. And Atalanta are, I think they've gone well beyond the fairy tale stage of the story, which we were at a few years ago. They're just an established top four side at the moment. That's where they are. That's where they've been consistently under Gian Piero Gasperini. And they sold another important player this summer, Christian Romero, to Tottenham. I really like Romero. He was so good there last season. But I'm past the point of being able to ever believe that selling a player is going to make a difference to Atalanta, because they've done it over and over again, even in this stretch, and even selling Papu Gomez, their captain, and I thought their single most important player last year, and did it all without missing a beat.
Another high-profile player who's left Serie A is Donnarumma, eventually on his free transfer away. He's gone to PSG. Pochettino insists he'll have to fight for the number one jersey with Keylor Navas, but I think he'll eventually emerge as their number one. He was Italy's number one for Euro 2020. It must be tremendously disappointing for AC Milan to have brought him all the way through and then to see him move off to one of Europe's super clubs at the end of his contract.
Yes, look, it's been a long story leading to this point with Donnarumma at Milan several years ago when he did renew his contract. I'm trying to think if it was 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was 3 years ago. There was a talk that he was going to leave. He wasn't going to sign a new contract. The fans turned on him. He was nicknamed Dollaruma, and fans waved fake dollar bills at him at Milan. He has had a fractious relationship with the board there, and I think that we can say that there were times when perhaps Mino Raiola, who's his agent, may even have encouraged that a little bit or stoked it a little bit, because I think Frank Pidoyala knew that he could take his client somewhere else and make even more money, which he certainly is going to do in Paris. And my one concern for Donnarumma as an individual is, look, he's gone to PSG, and Keylor Navas is a very good goalkeeper who's started the season already by making that point and playing very, very well. For Milan, it's a huge loss. You don't replace a player like that who was literally the player of the tournament at Euro 2020 and who is a whole career of being magnificent ahead of him. But I also do see two sides of this, because look, putting it sort of in a bit starkly, what other high profile talented Mino Raiola client have you seen that stays at one club? It doesn't happen, because there's financial motives at work. And so I think perhaps the mistake Milan made was ever believing that they could hold on to him and keep getting him to renew contracts. Maybe they should have cashed out what they could.
Well, Serie A gets underway this weekend. Inter trying to defend the Scudetto. Juventus favourites to win it. Nikki, thanks a million for joining us.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Brightening up your evenings like Jurgen Klopp's teeth.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.